That was like a long time ago.
85 years ago.
It was last century.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
This is Eric Stokes from Brightside IT in Atlanta, Georgia, and you're listening to Help Me with HIPAA podcast.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs and Security First IT, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, David.
Woo, a little bit too much coffee.
I never really know how that's going to come out until you say it, and it's like I don't plan ahead enough. I should plan ahead better with some pithy comment.
Pithy. I've heard that word a lot lately for some reason.
So,
just never know.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Getting all ready for the boot camp. Working out. Doing my push-ups.
Well, personally, I think we should remind everybody that this comes out on October 4th.
All right.
The early bird special ends on October 5th.
So you better get busy.
Yeah, get jiggy with it. And, you know, if you're hearing this after October 5th, but before November 5th, you can still sign up for the boot camp and, you know, whine to David if you got a problem with the price. So the boot camp is November 5th, 6th, and 7th, which is a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
True.
And we are approved for CCB, HCCA's Compliance Certification Board. We are approved for CEUs, like a boatload of them. All the live training you need in a year.
Wow.
And we are also approved that we will have one of the OCR investigators from the regional office here in the ATL that will be joining us on Thursday afternoon for Q&A.
Cool.
I know, right?
Yeah, that was fun last time.
I know. I loved everybody's eyes when she would answer questions, and then she would look confused because she didn't know the background that we had all talked about. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, might want to bring you some something that makes it not feel so uncomfortable when you're squirming so much. You know, wear some comfortable clothes. And
yeah, true that. So, it is... you know, it's shaping up to be another really good one. We'll end with a bang.
Bang.
Mm-hmm. So, y'all bring it on.
Yeah. It's going to be fun, as always.
Yeah.
All right. So,
we have some great quotes of people saying, I can't believe, you know, I can't believe I'm going to a thing where I'm going to manage to talk about HIPAA for 3 days. That's absolutely impossible. And at the end of it, they say, I can't believe how much I enjoyed this and how much I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Same person.
Yeah. Yes.
So keep that in mind.
It's a lot.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's fun.
And alumni get special pricing. So if you're wanting to come back, let us know. We'll give you special pricing anytime.
Sure enough.
All right. Are we done with that?
You got anything else?
Not that I know of right now.
All right. So I still have the October 24th Cybersecurity Summit. It's going to be up here in the Charlotte area, right outside of Charlotte in Indian Land, South Carolina. So if any business can attend, it's put on by the Lancaster Chamber of Commerce. And so we're going to talk about cybersecurity for half a day.
Ooh, ah.
Yep. Going to be fun stuff.
Yep. Too bad I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
I would be having some fun with David up there.
Yeah.
All righty then. So, yeah, we've got stuff. Yeah. I'm, you know, signing up for stuff next year, but it's so far out at this point. I can't believe this year's almost over.
Mm-hmm. Going quick.
We're finna hit 2020. Seems like just yesterday we were screaming, Y2K!
Yeah, 2020, well, the year it all turns clear.
Hopefully. I'm planning on 2020 being my year. I am. I think I've earned it.
Your year, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's going to be my year. It's just going to be, you know.
So what defines your year?
Where every time I turn around, there's not some major crap happening that, you know, destroys me emotionally, physically, or mentally, or all of the above. No surgeries, no, you know, family drama or any of those things. Drama, trauma, all of the above.
Right. Yeah. That'll be difficult.
Just do my work. People pay their bills. And, you know, that's
on
it.
On time.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, cool. Well, so in today's episode, we're going to be talking about some of that.
Indeed.
We're going to talk about the first patient access settlement, which has finally come through. You know, we heard from Severino, who mentioned that they would be putting an emphasis on this issue. So now we have it, and we're going to look into all the fun stuff that came out of that, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, to say the least. Yeah, because when I'm reading it, I'm like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, whoa, whoa, mm-hmm. whoa.
Yeah. So for those of you who are listening and you're like, patient access settlement, that doesn't have anything to do with me. You might want to hang in there.
Yeah, because there's some pretty interesting stuff in here.
Yep. Well, before we dive into that, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
2/3 of small businesses that experience a cybersecurity breach end up closing their doors within 6 months. Cybercriminals are targeting your practice and coming after your most sensitive data. Visit us online and schedule a time to talk about what you can do to protect yourself, your patients, and your practice. Our website is securityfirstit.com. That's securityfirstit.com.
Does your business work with medical practices? As a medical practice business associate, do you realize that if you have access to patient information, you have to follow the same HIPAA rules as your client? Call Cardin today at 678-292-5001 so they can assess your privacy and security practices to help ensure you are protected and prepared. Visit CardinHQ.com to learn more.
All right, Donna, so let's get into the patient access settlement. Tell us what had happened.
So first of all, it's easier if we look at the timeline and then we talk about the settlement. Because, you know, of course, as always, the headline is $85,000 mm-hmm. for a single patient medical record issue. So we're not looking at it's one patient. So imagine if you had a whole bunch of these. And I'm curious, you know, about this in a lot of ways. But the net of it is, as always, the corrective action plan, or CAP, is the one where we learn everything. But first, let's look at the timeline. And this, well, just remember, it's about patient care. So mm-hmm. here we go. A patient at Bayfront Health, St. Petersburg, asked for medical records relating to a fetal heart monitor procedure they had done. And they asked for the records on October 18th, 2017. They were told the records don't exist. So, got a problem right there. Because, mm-hmm. you know. Eventually, the patient retained counsel. And counsel then requested the records on January 2nd, 2018. No response. The attorney requested the records again for the third time on behalf of the patient. Will you send this patient their medical records on February 12th. Finally, in March, they send them an incomplete set of records. So first of all, the records don't exist. Then they send them an incomplete set. So let's review.
Now they somewhat exist.
Yeah, our bad. They did exist, but we couldn't find them. I don't know. So it's not even, you know, the right ones. So finally, you know, I'm sure that at some point somebody said, you know, this is a HIPAA violation. Mm-hmm. So they filed a complaint with OCR August 14th, 2018. So that's almost a year after the request. Okay. Mm-hmm. Finally, on August 23rd, 2018, Bayfront supplies a complete set of records to the patient's counsel, not to the patient, who everybody had been asking for it to go to the patient. Everything else had gone to the patient. Now they're like, to the lawyer.
Yeah.
And eventually the patient got the information from the attorney, of course, because then now you've got it in an unsecured format. Like, it become, that's a whole nother complicated issue that they didn't seem to really dig deep in. But they still didn't give it to the patient. Let me just say, they technically did not do what they had been asked to do in writing by the patient. On February 7th, 2019, they finally did send a complete set of records to the patient who had requested them in October
2018. Yeah, that's not really a reasonable time frame.
You know, it's a week after OCR gets the complaint, miraculously, this complete set of records is available and sent. So did they make up the records? Which, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's kind of like the, can you give us an instant response plan or a assessment past, you know, in the past, sign right off on this that happened a year ago?
Can you do an SRA for 2012, please?
Yeah.
Will you date it 2012? So will you give me any kind of fetal heart monitor? Just pull one. But when you look at it, it technically is 477 days between the time the patient asked for the medical records and got them.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow.
Okay, so HIPAA says you got 30 days to fulfill the request, and you can request in writing, let the patient know you need an additional 30 days, but one time you can ask for an additional 30 days. That's it.
Hmm.
So where's the disconnect here? Where there's so many things that are a problem. The length of time it took, the fact that supposedly the records didn't exist, then only part of the records exist, not the whole records. And then, you know, it's like you feel like you're watching an episode of Lucy. And with it all, you know, we've got the chocolate one. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we're good. We're good. Oh, crap, we're not. But there's, you know, 50 episodes of Lucy that would apply here if you just imagine how many ways this was screwed up. And that, you know, Lucy was done in humor. This was not funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it's about patient care. And, you know, let's just say there's a small chance that this happened to one patient. Anybody want to take that wager on to say they believe this happened to one patient and not any others at Bayfront?
No, I don't think so.
No, you're not going to take that side. Not at all. And so we know, we've talked about this recently a lot because we knew this enforcement thing was going on. And it is our job to inform the public. or at least our listening public. I wasn't drinking in public. I was drinking in a bar. Anyway, they threw me into public. I love that line. All right, so people have a bad day. When we work in a business that requires customer service beginning to end, because again, if your job is to care for somebody, and I know every customer is not going to be a great customer, but the bottom line is that's what we're in the business of doing. And if there is truly somebody that we cannot do what they're asking us to do under the law, then let legal people deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's clearly nothing wrong here, at least from anything that they've supplied in this. Now, another little tidbit is Bayfront seems to be, and you know, all of these who owns who gets complicated.
Right.
But Health Management Associates from Naples, which I will say, full disclosure, at one time I was doing programming work down there. But that's when they had clinics that they were using to feed into the hospitals, and they owned clinics. And so our medical practice software they were using. And so I actually did go to the offices down there. That was like a long time ago.
85 years ago.
It was last century. When you think I've been in business for myself 20 years, so I'm just saying. But anyway, I can tell you it was like 1995, September 25th, 1995, because I was there when my nephew was born.
I was wondering how in the world you knew that exact date.
Yeah, I know, right? Yep, there you go. And happy birthday, you know. But anyway, that company got in a whole bunch of trouble for billing fraud. Now, they were later purchased by Community Health Systems, and now I'm not sure who owns who anymore. But that billing fraud thing, they were hit by the Justice Department, and between civil lawsuits and the Justice Department, you know, they were paying out $500 million or more. Mm-hmm. So $85,000, they're like, strike them a check, quick! Or they ask for more.
Yeah.
You know, which reminds me of, you know, the conversation that a panelist who was from the financial world mentioned when everybody's complaining about these corrective action plans and these huge $1 million settlements. And they ask him what he thinks. And he's like, wow, we would be excited if that was all we got, you know, because in our world, you know, you're on an 8-year corrective action plan and, you know, $20-30 million, you're not paying $1 million and a 2-year corrective action plan. We would love to have that. Hmm. And everybody kind of shut up at that point. Well, we'll just move on to the next topic.
It's all relative.
Yeah, I know. So I'm sure they took it the same way. You know, to them, when you're paying out $500 million in settlements, you know, a few years back, and now you get an opportunity to pay 85 in a 1-year corrective action plan, you're like, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that's where most people end with the story. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But we know where the story is.
The story is behind the story.
The story is in the cap.
Or is it under the cap?
It depends. How you want to look at it. So their 1-year corrective action plan, it had a lot, because you know when this legal stuff, you have to read the wording, exactly the wording. Mm-hmm. They're not going to tell you a lot of stuff, so you pay attention to the way it's stated and what's referenced, and that's where you get the skinny of what's really going on behind the scenes, or at least mm-hmm. you can infer it.
Yes, not assume, but infer.
Exactly, and not imply, but infer.
Correct.
They're not implying, but we're inferring. There is your confusing vocabulary lesson for the day. Okay. So here's the first element that was listed in their corrective action plan. Bayfront shall develop, maintain, and revise as necessary its written access policies and procedures to comply with federal standards that govern the privacy of individually identifiable health information.
Okay, so they're no saying policies and procedures.
Their policies and procedures shall address, but not be limited to, the covered conduct, you know, that we're talking about here, so patient right of access. So not be limited. So they're saying you should have policies and procedures about the entire privacy rule. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
So that I found somewhat interesting, that in itself. And of course, then it also did the 60 days. You give us 30 days and then 60 days, and it goes back and forth. So the policies and procedures that they do gets approved by OCR.
Mm-hmm.
And they do specifically define the requirements, patient right access, because they say they shall include, but not limited to, these specific things. Review and update as necessary, designated record set policy contained within the right of access PHI policy to ensure comprehensive responses to requests for records. So there are a lot of people who will say, well, what do I have to give them? okay? Here's the bottom line. You're supposed to define what your designated record set includes. That's a policy and procedure. It should exist. Mm-hmm. So when you define what your designated record set includes, what you consider a medical record, and that will apply legally across the board in a lot of ways, this is what we consider a medical record, then everything that you consider a medical record goes to the patient, except for those exclusions that we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And other people are like, well, when somebody sends me all this stuff I don't want, I'm like, shred it. You ask for one lab report, they send you the whole chart. Keep the lab report. Get rid of everything else because you didn't ask for it. But if you asked for it and you got it and you used it to make medical decisions, whether you decided to do nothing based on it or do something based on it, it needs to go into your designated record set. If you used it to make decisions. Now, that's the tricky part, because some people are now saying, you can't include my records in a medical record request. So at some point, OCR is going to have to come out and deal with that one. But the bottom line is, when they talked about it, at some point, they probably made the argument that the fetal heart monitor report wasn't part of the medical record. So that's why they were told that it didn't exist. And that's why they weren't given it when they were given a partial record. That's my guess. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, because we know how they work but don't work. So either they, or it could be both. They considered it not part of the medical record, and that's why they said it didn't exist, and then sent the partial is what I think happened. Then they throw in this little twist, and this is where things get interesting. From this point forward, it's a little tricky. Protocols for training all Bayfront's workforce members and business associates that are involved in receiving or fulfilling access requests is necessary and appropriate to ensure compliance with the policies and procedures that they've created. And business associates complying with your policies and procedures. How many business associates look at your policies and procedures? I'm going to go with a big fat zero.
Yeah, I concur.
I mean, you know, and train them on it. Come on.
Wow. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, wait a minute. I've read it a few times. Now, then they throw in, and we'll come back to this in a minute, but it's important to point it out. The next thing is, application of appropriate sanctions against Bayfront workforce members who fail to comply with your privacy policies and procedures.
Okay. Now,
we've talked about sanction policies. We did a whole episode on it. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Because that's when we both got nervous. I don't like it when somebody's going to give me rules and tell me how things are going to go horribly awry. But the bottom line is, you're supposed to have a sanction policy and you're supposed to show that you've actually sanctioned somebody. And when they say, well, we've never sanctioned anybody, if you've got more than two people, you know, yes, a tiny little office with four or five people, I could get that. But not a huge organization. You know, there's going to be somebody doing something where you're at least going to have to say, hey, you screw that up, don't screw that up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a verbal one. Now, that has to have happened. And I will tell you that more than once on OCR investigations, I've seen them say, show me the number of times that you've sanctioned employees in, you know, show me all of your records for employee sanctions in 2017. You know, you can't go back and make those up. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Like, here's a partial file.
Sanction policies are not in our designated records.
Yeah, that'll be $650, please.
I will only pay $6.50. All right, so you got that in there. That sanction thing's in there. And in a minute, we're going to come back to this whole sanction concept, because now we're going to really see clearly that there had to have been a business associate involved in this release of information thing, because it then says a process for reviewing business associate performance with regard to access requests and responses and terminating relationships with business associates who fail to permit Bayfront to comply with their own policies and procedures.
Oh, getting deep now.
But you think about that. Think about the broad implications of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your IT company is failing to permit you to comply, hello, think of where that could go.
Mm-hmm.
You want to think about it very hard? No. Yeah, that's something to think about, you know, with a cocktail. Because that could have broad implications beyond the release of information companies. And mm-hmm. I will say that that's a whole industry of its own, that they're struggling with all of these new requirements anyway. And that was one of the things that OCR pointed out is, you know, we're telling you you're required to charge costs, blah, blah, blah. And no, we can't enforce, we can't make these release of information companies charge you just cost. So you got to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if your policies and procedures say that, and now you're required to follow our policies and procedures, or we terminate our relationship?
Yeah, I'm seeing business associates starting to charge more money.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. In that particular case, that won't help, because if they're going to charge more money, I can't use you.
I know. It's going to be a catch 2020 for sure.
2020.
You like that?
Yeah. And that to note that they are supposed to review their performance with regard to access requests and responses and terminate the relationship if they're not doing it. And they have to have procedures for doing all of that. And I assure you, they have to be able to show they're doing all of that, because the very next thing says designation of one or more individuals who are responsible for ensuring that the business associate agreement with any business associate involved in these access responsibilities under the privacy rule are properly executed. So not only did we have a business associate that may have been going around its own and we didn't seem to pay attention, or we didn't even have our own policies and procedures to make it happen, but we didn't have proper BAAs in place.
Mm.
Doesn't that sort of imply that? At least I'm inferring it.
Yeah, I think it's there.
But to say that these statements would apply only to release of information companies and release of information business associates and release of information business associate agreements, I don't see how you could say that. You know, this is other, you know, your transcription companies, your, you know, all of that. Somebody has to make sure, somebody is designated to make sure your business associates are following the rules and meeting your compliance obligations.
Wow.
Now, and I'm not saying, you know, we say vet the BAs, and you definitely should vet them. But that's, you know, following the security rule and the all of that kind of stuff, that's their obligation, because it is separate obligations. However, whatever you're outsourcing to them to do, they're taking your obligation. And if your obligation means you're supposed to do something for your patient and you're outsourcing it to them to provide that to the patient, then you should be monitoring and making sure they're doing it. Tick tock.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I just think that that's something I'm going to keep an eye on to see where that applies, how that's interpreted, you know, because when they do these, they, you know, it's like we always say, these corrective action plans and settlements, it's like, there you go. That's what you're supposed to do.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see this being brought up on day three of the boot camp.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to ask that question. All right. And then, if that wasn't enough about BAs, This one I found even more interesting. Within 30 days of the effective date and for 1 year following the effective date of the cap, Bayfront shall provide HHS with the following: the names of all Bayfront business associates that receive, approve, deny, bill for, and or fulfill access requests for access to copies or inspection of individuals' PHI. So you're going to give me a list of any business associate that has anything to do and copies of the business associate agreements that you maintain with those business associates. So clearly there must have been more than one involved. Yeah. Or maybe they're after this, they got a new one. But they're saying, you're going to give us 30 days, you're going to give us that whole list, and you're going to show us the business associate agreement. So, you know, there's clearly a little something going on with BAAs in there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of mention about business associates.
Yeah. Well, and then this is the one that I have never seen before. I mean, I've seen a lot of discussions about having the right business associate agreement and all of those kind of things. But, you know, the fact that they are clearly mentioning that the business associates must follow your policies. So, first, you're instructed to develop the policies and procedures that meet the obligation of the privacy rule for patient access specifically, but all of the privacy rule. Right?
Yep.
That implies they don't have them. Or they're very limited or incorrect. So then you have to have them, and then you're supposed to make sure that your business associates are following your policies and procedures. And if they are not, then they are failing to permit you to comply, and you need to terminate your relationship. How many of you? You know, we barely get people to understand that the IT company comes in. The IT company needs to know what's in your policy and procedure. If you don't know what's in their password procedure, how can you make sure that they're following it, David?
You can't.
It's impossible. What about their backups?
You can't.
Audits, patching, you know, and a policy and procedure is we're outsourcing that to David. I don't know that that's going to fly based on what we've seen.
Nope.
So it makes me wonder about the spread to the security rule part of this. But again, then there's a whole section on training, which we expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
When you're required to do policies and procedures, there's always a training element that you've done these, we've approved them, you have to make sure they're distributed to all the staff, and everybody's trained. That's normal. But then I noticed something. Bayfront shall provide HHS with training materials per section, telling them they have to do a training, for all members of the workforce and relevant business associates within 60 days of the approval of their policies and procedures.
Say what? So does that mean that the business associates now have to take part in Bayfront's training, or that the business associates just have to provide their training material?
Doesn't say. But they have to have the training materials that show that all members of the workforce and relevant business associates. So it doesn't talk about business associates' workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not clear exactly what that means, and I'm sure, you know, there's details behind the scenes on how that works. But the bottom line is, I've never had to make sure that a business associate trained on my policies and procedures.
Right.
Again, what else does this, you know, spread to? Because technically, you know, I'm a fan of the IT company saying, hey, you know, this client has a different policy and procedure on such and such. We need to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or we participated in this. This is what we did, so that they see that they're part of it. And it's actually an awareness program for the IT staff. But there's a lot of BA stuff going on in there. And, you know, the hospital probably said, we didn't do it. It was the BA, and they're separate and mm-hmm. equally liable. And the BA said, bounces off of me and sticks to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do have to wonder, is there a business associate that's going to be part of this settlement? Not for Bayfront, but maybe they're going to go after them on a separate incident.
But the thing is, if they didn't have, because the business associate may have clearly here argued, our business associate agreement didn't include anything specific to this, and we were never told that we had to do anything specific to this, so we followed our own policies and procedures, which, you know, we're not required as a business associate to have privacy policies and procedures, which is where this rule is.
Right. So the privacy policy and procedures of the covered entity would flow down basically mm-hmm. to the business associates and how they do business with that specific covered entity.
And technically, that's what the business associate agreements say,
mm-hmm.
is that the privacy policies and requirements flow down, that mm-hmm. you're outsourcing there to them doing something that you're required to do that the privacy policy applies to. And that there shouldn't be separate privacy policies. That's why it's, you know, been worded that way, because technically there shouldn't be. The commitment is made between the covered entity and the patient.
It does make me wonder, though, that if Bayfront went to this business associate and said, I need a copy of this designated record set, did the business associate say, well, no, or we'll get to it at some point? I mean...
Well, the way most of those are structured, it doesn't even go to the hospital. It just goes straight to the business associate, you know, and the hospital mm-hmm. doesn't even know what's going on. So I would advise anyone, and you know, like I said, I answer questions as I can periodically on social media and stuff, and often I see questions about the why can't I get my records from my doctor, and why can't the hospital give me blah blah blah, and at this point, I would say if you're having any problems getting your records, you file with them a privacy officer complaint. And their notice of privacy practices should explain exactly how you reach their privacy officer. Or you call up and you say, I want to talk to the privacy officer. And if mm-hmm. they don't know anybody, then you say, clearly I'm going to have some fun with you. I would like to talk to your HIPAA privacy officer. Who's in charge of compliance? I want to talk to your privacy officer. I'm allowed to do that under your notice of privacy practices. It says I can. And then you say, I'm not getting access to my records. And then it's absolutely that person's responsibility to make sure that the policies and procedures are being met. That's clear under HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have to do something. They have to look into it. They have to ask questions. But my guess is every one of these requests just got passed on. No one was looking until they got a letter from OCR.
Yeah.
Because you can see everything started happening then.
Yeah. Oh, here's the records.
Less than 10 days. Boom. Everything good. See ya. So it never, my guess, even went to OCR until the business associate had screwed around with it for a while, which is another reason that they had the thing in there that you need to be monitoring them if you're going to outsource this.
Yeah.
Mm. So I'm curious to see, you know, what other implications this may have in other areas, but I don't think it could be any more clear what they're expecting from covered entities, whether they're supplying the records themselves or outsourcing it to a business associate.
Yep.
Well, thank you for that drop of wisdom.
Well, I'm just thinking about the covered entities, you know, that I come into a lot of times, especially when it's a new client, and I'm asking those questions like, I need to see your policies and procedures about this, this, and this. And they're like, oh, we don't have those yet. Or here's our template that we have not filled in.
just to get something on the table.
Yeah, I know. I'm struggling and fighting with them to get some of these things as well. So
yeah. So it you know, it's the same old, same old. But unlike the security ones and not doing the risk analysis and all of that, this one is an immediate impact on a patient. Immediate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, you know, the way that we're supposed to be doing this. And, you know, it happens all the time that you forget there's a person at the end of the line. It's not just paperwork. It's a person. And we don't do enough, I don't think, to remind people of that. I personally got that scared into me. Mm-hmm. And this was like in the early 90s when I'm doing a tour of an ambulance that got all these new, you know, the early GPS stuff and drug interaction databases and all that. But, it wasn't tied to the internet necessarily. But they were able to put these things on laptops and have that capability to better find the location that they needed to go to and all this. So they wanted me to see it because nerd. And I was like, it was really cool stuff. And they were talking about this drug interaction database where they could enter the drugs that this patient was on and make sure they didn't give them anything that would interact. And I was like, wow, I'm really glad I don't write that kind of code. Because that would scare the crap out of me, you know, that I could make a mistake and, you know, someone could die.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy giving me the tour never skipped a beat because I wrote the billing software. You know, I wrote the software that filed claims and statements and all kinds of stuff and made the money come in and begged for it to come in, whatever you want to call it. But he never skipped a beat. He looked right at me and he said, if you don't do your job, we can't buy this stuff, so people could still die.
Great.
And I'll never forget. I could take you to the spot in the service bay at the ambulance service and take you right to the spot that I was standing in today and just blinking at the dude. And just it took my breath away, just that thought. And I don't think enough people really realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to do a better job of that in healthcare. You know, that it doesn't mean that someone necessarily could die, but it could mean that someone's life has changed forever. And, you know, a whole lot more stuff. And it's certainly something that was eye-opening to me and I've never forgotten. And I think more people should have that experience somewhere.
I agree.
Yeah. Have you ever had it just now with me?
Yeah. Just now. I'm thinking I could die. if you don't do these show notes each week.
Yeah. We know how the podcast would go.
Then people won't learn what they're supposed to learn and people could die. If you're not listening to this podcast, you could be killing people.
Oh, jeez. And then... as usual, now we're done.
All right. So you heard it, folks. Listen to every single episode, beginning to end, or people could die. That's all I'm saying.
No matter how hard I try, I can count on you to take things awry.
All right, there you go. You're a poet. Didn't know it. No, no. All right, folks, that's our show for today. Make sure you share us out on your favorite social media site. Rate us on our podcasting app. We always need your help to spread the word. And remember, the boot camp, thehippobootcamp.com. You can always send your questions and ideas to Donna. She has nothing else to do. So remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims. The show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.